This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The eyes of the nation are on Florida, especially the Keys and Jacksonville, as they begin their long recovery from Hurricane Irma. But the world is also watching the Caribbean, including islands that suffered far more damage. Last week's hurricane all but destroyed some communities on St. Thomas, St. Martin, and Barbuda. Food, water, and electricity are often scarce, and the local tourist economies are at risk of crashing. How are people in the Caribbean surviving after Irma? And how are the recovery efforts taking shape? Joining us by phone from Charlotte Amélie in St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands is Kelsey Nowakowski, a contributing writer to National Geographic and the newspaper The St. Thomas Source. Kelsey, welcome to 1A.
Hi, Joshua. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Also with us on the line in Havana, Cuba, is Michael Weissenstein, the Caribbean Bureau Chief for the Associated Press. Michael, glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Hi.
Kelsey, let me just ask you, describe the situation you're seeing. I gather that the island of St. Thomas is still mostly without power and water is scarce.
Yes, we only have power on a few streets right now and at the hospitals, but otherwise most of our lines are down and we're just trying to distribute food where people can't get out to the few grocery stores that are open.
I think most Americans have seen the pictures out of South Florida, in the Florida Keys, and also in Jacksonville. I don't know if you can compare what we're seeing here to what you're seeing there, if you've seen any of the local pictures, but can you paint us a picture of the devastation?
There are roofs off in every direction. Some areas were hit harder, where it almost seems like 50% of the roofs are blown out. People are missing windows. Trees down everywhere. It looks like autumn in the Caribbean. There's no green to be seen other than the one golf course on island. There's just a lot of debris everywhere still, and the roads are really only passable for one car still.
Michael Weissenstein, you have the larger view on the Caribbean. How much does what we're describing in St. Thomas mirror what we're seeing elsewhere in other islands?
That sounds like what's going on pretty much everywhere across the Northeast Caribbean, the Virgin Islands, St. Martin, St. Barts, to a lesser extent, Barbuda. These are the places that got hit worst, and they're all suffering some combination of what you described.
Yeah, the Dutch Red Cross, I believe, said there are still, Michael, more than 200 people who are listed as missing. Is that right?
I haven't heard that exact number, but I wouldn't be surprised. I would be surprised if they turned out to be dead. I think a lot of people go simply unlocatable in these kind of crises. We haven't seen anything that indicates that there could be 200 people that have been killed, but there's a lot of chaos still out in that part of the region.
Yeah, so they may just be kind of incommunicado, but otherwise alive. Kelsey Nowakowski. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, there are people, there are very bad communications, there are people getting evacuated by militaries, by cruise ships, so hopefully all of those 200 people will turn up one way or another.
Kelsey, I'm sorry, I'm not sure if you just mentioned, excuse me if you just mentioned this, but is there a curfew in effect where you are right now?
Yes, they're only allowed out between the hours of 12 and 6 p.m., if they don't have a curfew pass, which most of the people who have curfew passes are people involved in relief efforts or people who need to open their grocery stores or their businesses. And people are being stopped at checkpoints, but we've seen some checkpoints that are operational one day and not the next day. But most of the ones around the capital of Charlotte Amalie are still being enforced.
We are talking about the Caribbean islands after Hurricane Irma with Kelsey Nowakowski, a contributing writer to National Geographic and the St. Thomas Source, joining us from St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Michael Weissenstein, the Caribbean Bureau Chief for the Associated Press, joining us in Havana, Cuba. We welcome your questions and thoughts as well, particularly if you are from one of the Caribbean islands that's been devastated, if you have friends there, if you have family there. Tell us how they're doing, what questions you might have about the relief efforts. Email 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Kelsey, what about help? How much is coming in to help St. Thomas right now, particularly from the U.S.?
The day after
Hey Kelsey, I'm sorry to make you repeat yourself. We've got kind of a rough line with you. Would you restate that?
Yes. Right after the storm, we saw helicopters flying overhead, taking medical patients out of our hospital, which is not fully operational right now because it sustained damage. We've had emergencies come on land yesterday who are helping distribute food and water, but there's still, because cell service is so bad here, and even I'm struggling with that, it's hard to know where distribution centers are. Most people don't have day working, so if you don't have a radio or a car you can listen to, you don't know where you can find help. So there is help coming in, but for instance, we haven't seen FEMA going door to door yet, but we do know they're at shelters, but most people don't know where those shelters are. And this is a small island, but with the roads so backed up and gas so scarce, these distribution centers that a lot of private businesses are running at this point, bringing in goods from and donations from Puerto Rico and from St. Croix are really crucial.
Yeah, I did want to ask you, Michael, about Puerto Rico. Carmen tweeted, Puerto Rico was very lucky this time. We are ready to help and serve as the link to their recuperation. And Michael, that seems to be part of the role that Puerto Rico is playing right now since Irma wasn't as bad there.
Yeah, absolutely. The Puerto Rico National Guard, other elements of the U.S. military, private people in their own boats, a lot of elements are basing in Puerto Rico in order to get to the worst affected smaller islands.
Now, Michael, in terms of the response also, the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, has been criticized somewhat for a slow response to some of the islands that are in France's purview. The King of the Netherlands visited the islands yesterday. What about that international response?
Yeah, they have been getting criticized. I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's going to be really hard to get everything that an island needs right away after a Category 5 hurricane hits. But yeah, I think there's been some justified criticism of how long it took to get all the elements in place there, which I think are not quite there even yet.
We're getting a number of questions about the tourist economy in the Caribbean, which obviously is one of the key staples of the economy on many of these islands. And Kelsey, I know we've got kind of a tough connection with you on the phone, but Aaron did write on our website, the1a.org, how are these islands going to cope with the loss of tourists? I personally know a person who was supposed to be on St. Thomas last week. Her company canceled the trip for everyone, which was probably 50 plus people. I'm sure some islands will gain as people change their destinations, but islands like St. Thomas and St. Martins will definitely take a big financial hit. Do any of them have other industries that can sustain them during the rebuilding? Kelsey?
Can you hear me better now? Is this?
Yeah.
I'm trying not to move too much. Okay.
Yeah, it seems a little better now.
People who are in the trades are definitely going to have a lot of work after this. It's going to pick up. There's going to be a lot of construction efforts. But in terms of the tourism economy, it's going to take a big hit. A lot of our hotels are damaged, and a lot of the activities that people come here to do are damaged. I mean, our beach bars have been taken out throughout the Virgin Islands, including the British Virgin Islands. Anything that was near the shore really took it was wiped out. In terms of cruise ships coming to port, I already know that a lot of the major cruise lines have canceled their upcoming calls to the port. And a lot of people will suffer.
Hey, Kelsey, you there? All right, we'll try to get Kelsey back before the end of this segment. But Michael, let me come to you with a question from Zachary, who also wrote on our website. Venezuelan Minister of the Interior Nestor Luis Reverol Torres said that Venezuela has sent 10 tons of food, drinking water, medicines, and mattresses and other items to help Cubans recover. Will the U.S. send anything, Michael?
To Cuba? I don't think we can expect direct U.S. government aid to Cuba. No.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, by the way, that we lost Kelsey. Obviously, utilities and communications are kind of tough in St. Thomas, understandably. But could I ask you, Michael, also to chime in about other industries besides tourism that might help the Caribbean recover from Hurricane Irma? Is tourism the backbone, or is there more?
Yeah, tourism is the backbone of particularly these smaller islands. I'm not sure that they can change their economic model at this stage.
Another aspect of the response before we run out of time with you, Michael, there have been some accusations of racism, with some people in St. Martin saying tourists were prioritized in terms of the relief, the evacuation efforts, and that ran down a very clear color line. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, tourists are always going to be the first people evacuated, other than the ill and children and the elderly, in any crisis, because they don't have the local, you know, they don't have homes, they don't have all the resources that local people have. In the Caribbean, that's broken down along racial lines. Most of the tourists are white. Most of the local people are Afro-Caribbean or mixed-race Caribbean. But there is a lot, I think that the complaints about racism have gone beyond just that breakdown. And it's people saying that really simply beyond the fact of tourist local, there really has been more focus on the whiter, wealthier victims of this crisis and not the others.
That's Michael Wiesenstein, the Caribbean Bureau Chief for the Associated Press, joining us from Havana. Michael, thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure.
Our conversation continues in just a moment about how the Caribbean will recover. Still to come later in the hour, my conversation with Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake, and we welcome more of your questions and thoughts about the Caribbean getting back on its feet after Irma, 1A@WAMU.org. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're talking about the Caribbean islands after Hurricane Irma. We'd love to hear from you, too. Share what you know about the recovery effort, or if you have friends or family in the Caribbean, tell us what they're dealing with right now. Help us get a clearer picture of what's going on. You can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Clearly, a number of you are very concerned about those who are less fortunate, and particularly those whose homes might not be getting as much attention because they're not in the U.S. Squeeds tweeted us, many homes damaged in Key West are rich people's vacation houses. I hope the less affluent communities get more attention and aid. My mom's home and business are in Key West, but she's at her second house abroad and not too concerned about the damage. Rich people get insurance. Well, let's talk more about the aid and the recovery effort back here in studio. Joining us here now is Claire Alicia Nelson, the founder and president of the Institute of Caribbean Studies. Claire, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us in studio is Jono Anzalone, the vice president of international services at the American Red Cross. Jono, welcome.
Thank you, Joshua.
Claire, let me ask you a little bit more about the relief effort more broadly. We definitely want to talk about the Red Cross, but the Caribbean diaspora, there's a role for people in the mainland, in the U.S. and Canada, in sending money back to family. In terms of disaster relief, this is a large network that extends beyond the Red Cross. Talk about that.
Well, the Caribbean community has, especially since I think Grenada got hit, has always been involved. Actually, before that, there was a big Gilbert at damaged Jamaica. But what happened since then, here in the Washington, D.C. area, I think when Grenada got hit, we formed like a loose-knit alliance that would have relief concerts. And typically the embassy would have a website, and then all the national organizations are asked to support whatever website or whatever organization that the embassy deems. This is important because I must say, no offense to my Red Cross member here, that we have concerns that the Red Cross funds don't always go directly to who should get it. We also have concerns that in some countries, some people feel that depending on the party in power, the Red Cross support might only go to party supporters and not to people who are not in that party. So people always want to be able to support directly through churches that they know or organizations that they know on the ground.
So after Hurricane Gilbert, which was 1988,
So that has built up. So in D.C., for example, the last major disaster that the diaspora was engaged in was the floods in Dominica. And again, we came together and had an event for that. And what is important is that after that event, they were the first organization to move to start thinking not just to be involved in the relief effort, but the recovery and reconstruction. So we can come back to that. But that is a space that I think Diaspora can do much more than it's currently doing. And as a development organization, which ICS is, we're trying to promote that level, not just focus on relief, but what happens after the news cameras go away.
I should note, we did reach out to FEMA to see if they would be able to join the discussion. They did not respond to our request, but that invitation is open. John O'Anzalone, let me ask you about the Red Cross and the latest on the relief efforts in the Caribbean, especially since the Red Cross coordinates with federal disaster relief agencies. How's that going so far?
So it's a great question, Joshua, and Dr. Nelson's point's very well taken. I just returned from Houston, where I saw firsthand neutrality and impartiality at work in a very tense dynamic politically in Texas, where undocumented in particular were seeking shelter. And we know that there are at least 10 islands where we're currently sheltering those, not tourists, but local residents that really need that relief intervention, food, clothing, and shelter. And it's going to be a long road ahead. I got off the phone with the president of Antigua Barbuda last night, Michael Joseph, and a large part of what he's focused and worried about is the months ahead, not just the next couple of weeks where we're trying to sustain relief, but the recovery that's going to be years and years of hard work.
Are people feeling a little stretched thin right now, or is there enough to go around?
You know, I think any organization, to Dr. Nelson's point, it's not just the Red Cross that needs contributions. Any organization that the American public feel or the diaspora community feels they trust, they know that can infuse cash into these needed economies, that's the most important formula for disaster recovery and relief.
Claire?
I do want to say that the Caribbean has been preparing much better than it has in the past. The Caribbean Disaster Emergency Management Agency, which involves some 18 countries, which is all the CARICOM countries plus three of the British territories, have been on the ground already helping with obviously relief. And so to the extent that a country will ask for help, in the past, for example, there have been systems within the regional security agencies that cops and an army are moved from one island to the next to also help temporarily. So those preparation systems have been working. And as I said rightly, the Prime Minister said rightly, he's not so worried about the next 3 weeks. He's worried about what's going to happen in 3 months and further down the line.
Right. And just by way of clarification, CARICOM, the Caribbean community, this international organization that includes Antigua and Barbuda, the Bahamas, Jamaica, Haiti, Suriname, Trinidad and Tobago, Dominica, and others. We are speaking to Jono Anzalone from the American Red Cross, Claire Alicia Nelson, the founder and president of the Institute of Caribbean Studies. Let me get to a few of your comments as well. Gabe in Canandaigua, New York writes, "My parents weathered the storm on the north shore of St. Thomas, where they remain essentially stranded. Luckily, they were unharmed physically. We are in contact by cell phone intermittently, and they have very little information. I'm having difficulty stateside finding anyone who can assist them. Also, they seem to be suffering from shock, and it may be affecting their ability to devise a plan. Please help with any current information or resources." Claire, I wonder if you could address Gabe's question, and as well as not just the resources, but the communications piece, which we heard from Kelsey earlier, that just seems to be a foundational problem, too.
Well, what I know from talking to my friends who are Virgin Islanders is, first of all, the Virgin Islanders came together in a huge meeting last weekend. Of course, not just the Virgin Islands, but other islanders came together as well. And in Atlanta area, I know people are talking about actually flying down on a military plane. And as soon as they can, also flying into neighboring islands with boxes for other people. The question is that they can't get to somebody on the phone, then there's no way to find those people. How do you deal with the trauma and the shock? I think that SEDIMA, for example, and this is on the Caribbean side, has prepared counselors. They have people who are trained to deal with shock and training. I'm not sure if FEMA provides that counseling in the Virgin Islands, and especially because in the Caribbean region, issues of mental health have always been traditionally underserved, if you will. And so to probably find even local people training this on the ground in all across the whole region, I think is going to be very challenging.
And I just want to make sure we're clear. CDEMA, the Caribbean Disaster Emergency Management.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. Jono, what about that? How organizations like the Red Cross coordinate with resources to get them to people when communication lines are down, when roads are down? I think sometimes people figure, oh, you can just get a helicopter and just drop resources. When helicopters are expensive and roads are easier and it's just not the way it's done. How does that even work?
Yeah, my time on the islands, the logistic pipeline is extremely complex on a good day. You add a catastrophic disaster like Irma on top of it, it's extremely difficult. But to underestimate the power of humanity, whether it's organizations and most importantly, neighbors helping neighbors,
yes.
We want to encourage people to go to designated shelter locations where there are trained mental health professionals, health service professionals, which we know are still going to be overwhelmed on anything this size. It's always the case where there's not enough professionals to provide that mental health services versus the demand. But as the logistic pipeline clears up, we'll start to see more and more assistance from the outside within the Caribbean community, as Dr.
Definitely.
Nelson mentioned, to be able to support those needs.
What do you think is the most pressing need right now in terms of people who want to help? What can we do?
To Dr. Nelson's point, find an organization that you trust, financial contributions. The American public, diaspora community often open up their wallets, but they also open up their closets. And what we've seen time and time again is that the overwhelming amount of clothes and things that the good hearts of the American public and the diaspora think are needed are going to help. But essentially that clogs up the logistics pipeline. And we have pictures. I have pictures on my iPhone of mounds of supplies that simply are sitting there because they're not needed by those that are impacted by the disaster.
Yeah, Claire, I saw you immediately shake your head when you mentioned clothes.
I know, because I have had the pleasure of quote-unquote sorting clothes that were meant for the Caribbean, and the winter coats were included in. Please do not dump your old clothes on the Caribbean.
Yeah.
What they need is possibly food supplies, water, medicines, but if you're doing those things, again, the embassies or the FEMA or the Red Cross would have areas to say, okay, bring them here, and then they can be taken out. People, of course, as I said, are individually flying down with boxes of stuff and jumping on boats and getting to people they know. But unless you are working with a church that already has people on the ground, the best thing to do is give cash donations to a trusted, and look out for scammers. Please look out for scammers. Make sure if an email comes to you, you click to make sure it's coming from the Red Cross, because criminals love this kind of chaos.
Yeah. Well, we did an hour, by the way, in case you're wondering, how do I know who the trusted organizations are? We did an hour after Hurricane Harvey about how to tell who's real and who's not, and thinking through how to be the most supportive after Harvey. Some of those exact same principles would definitely be helpful after Irma. And you'll find that conversation on our website, the1a.org. That's the word, the number one, the letter A, .org. Let's bring in one more voice into the conversation before our time is up. Joining us now from St. John's, which is the capital of Antigua and Barbuda, is Charles Fernandez, the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Trade. Minister Hernandez, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much.
How is your country doing right now?
Well, first, let me just say that Antigua and Barbuda is a twin island state, one nation, but it's two different islands. I passed basically over Barbuda, and so a total devastation. But Antigua, thank God, dodged the bullet. And so we are able to coordinate from Antigua, and not just for Barbuda, but now more than ever for the other islands. The Antigua has become almost like the jumping-off point. Now, it's also important to note that we had our Dunkirk. We had to evacuate everyone from the island of Barbuda to Antigua. Now, you're talking about between 1,500 and 1,700 persons. And I can tell you, as an Antiguan, it was the proudest moment of my life. We had all the privately owned boats, a few privately owned planes. The government of Trinidad and Tobago gave us an aircraft. The government of Venezuela gave us a Hercules transport. And we were able to move the people off in less than just about 24 hours. Because, of course, we had the threat of Jose coming.
Right.
And we couldn't leave them there. So that is something that we accomplished. We now have all of the Barbudans in shelters and private homes in Antigua. We are working now to allow for them to have more permanent residence until the island starts to come up again.
Right.
As you would have heard, that something like 90% of the telephone poles have to be replaced. One of the things we're looking to do now is do away with that and put all our lines on the ground.
Okay.
So going forward, that will not be a problem. 100% of the electrical lines will have to be replaced. The portable water apparatus will have to be built from scratch.
Right.
And, of course, both landlines, cellular phone systems, everything out of work. We're facing now, we have to get our medical people into Barbuda to ensure that the health issues are dealt with.
Gotcha.
You have a number of some dead animals and a lot of water. You're going to have a lot of mosquitoes breeding. As a matter of fact, they've already started.
Mm-hmm.
And just to emphasize, the police station, fire stations, damaged roofs gone, the council hall, the bakeries, fishing vessels, the few hotels in Barbuda all suffered significant structural damage or
right.
were destroyed.
Right,
both
right.
schools damaged extensively.
I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. I do want to get to, I have some more questions for you, Minister Hernandez, but I do want to get to some comments from some of our listeners. Augie wrote us from Garner, North Carolina. My family is in Remedios, about 5 miles from the Caribbean on the northern coast. They have no electricity, lost roof tiles, and water coming into the house. The streets are littered with debris. Food, supplies, and water are scarce. In contrast, my husband's family in Havana now has power and cleanup has begun. There are areas harder hit, but recovery is quicker in the capital than the rest of the island. There is a quote, Havana is Cuba, everything else is just scenery. This applies to the entire island. Fat Tubin tweeted, how will the government pay for rebuilding? The Virgin Islands are in a fiscal crisis and haven't paid tax refunds in years. Claire Alicia Nelson, what about that? What about affording the rebuilding effort?
Oh, Lord. I'm going to stick to Antigua because this CARICOM and that's some of the things that we work on. First of all, the Barbudans, just to say the Barbudans in New York have been meeting. It turns out when I was talking to my colleagues there that there's almost as many Barbudans, if not more Barbudans outside of Barbuda in the UK, Canada and New York than here. But let's talk about reconstruction. The cost right now, Antigua and Barbuda is in an IMF program. And although
International Monetary Fund.
International Monetary Fund program, they own some $300 million. They estimate so far as $100 million to rebuild. And so the challenge is, how do you get either low-cost loan or grants? That's looking almost impossible. Antigua would get its funding either through the IMF or through the Caribbean Development Bank, which obviously is ready to lend. The question is, can they afford to borrow more? And so one of the things we've been talking about as Caribbean people is there a way for there to be more public-private partnerships in terms of redevelopment? But given the risk of more and more climate hurricanes and the fact that the Caribbean Risk Insurance Facility estimates that the damage to Antigua, they have to pay out already so far $6.8 million totally for the whole region. For this hurricane alone, they're estimating $15 million.
I'm sorry, $15 million or billion?
$15 million in payments so far.
In payments so far.
Yeah.
Minister Fernandez, very briefly, can I just ask you very, very briefly what you see as the prospect for being able to cover the cost? How's that looking so far, briefly?
Well, we're committed to do it. The point is the Barbudans want to get back on island. We have a number of important thing to note also that Antigua and Barbuda do not have a parent government. Most of the islands, with the exception of Cuba, all of the islands have a parent, a colonial government. So, for example, the British Virgin Islands, the British government is in there. The St. Martin, you have the Dutch and the French. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Virgin Islands, you have the U.S. government. Antigua and Barbuda depends on its CARICOM neighbors and other international friendly governments and aid organizations.
Right.
So it is very challenging. In addition to that, there is, as was mentioned by my colleague from CARICOM, there is now a new method of grading countries according to their borrowing facilities. In other words, once you graduate to a high income level, what happens is you are punished in that you can no longer borrow at concessionary rates.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Minister. We're low on time for this, but we'll try to pick this conversation up another time. But we're glad that at least there is some path forward
yes.
for the Caribbean, including for your nation. Charles Fernandez is the Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Trade of Antigua and Barbuda. Minister Fernandez, thanks for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Claire Alicia Nelson, the founder and president of the Institute of Caribbean Studies. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Jono Anzalone, VP of International Services at the American Red Cross. Thank you, Jono.
Thank you, sir.
We'll hear from Republican Senator Jeff Flake in just a moment. Stay close.